listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
You're at 33 seconds now. Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Glad to be here.
And, of course, Michael Kelly joins us as usual.
Good evening, everyone. Always happy to be here.
And welcome to September.
Yeah, already.
I know.
Yeah.
The further we get away from summer.
Yeesh.
Well, we've got an interesting topic tonight. We're going to talk about mind versus matter, how our thoughts affect our physical reality. It's a belief, which is customary. The first one is do no harm, do right. Number two, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number three, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. Four, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Five, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Six, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. Seven, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. Eight, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And nine, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. And to read the expanded version of these nine principles, please visit our website at metaphysicalhumanism.org. So, we welcome all those joining us live, as well as those listening to the archive. We appreciate your time. Glad you joined us. As I mentioned, the topic for tonight is mind versus matter, how our thoughts affect our physical reality. And we're going to turn it over to Michael, who will start off our discussion.
Well, one of the reasons I think this is such an interesting topic is because it ties into so many things in the metaphysical world. When we look at how our thoughts actually impact the physical, the real world around us, it shows us a lot about the nature of consciousness, the power of consciousness, and the nature of our reality, and in fact it being perhaps much more malleable than we thought it was. So tonight we're going to approach this in a few different avenues. We're going to look at the quantum mechanics side of it in terms of some of the different experiments that have been done, some of the cutting-edge science that's out there that shows how observation of the universe changes the universe. We're going to look at the laws of attraction, and we're going to also look at how our thoughts, our mindset, and our positivity changes our behavior in a practical way. So, first, I love looking at some of the aspects of quantum mechanics. Not only does it sound like you're in a science fiction movie, but it has immense implications to the future of our understanding of consciousness and physics. So, something that has been well established, it's been around for a long time, is the double slit experiment, which basically demonstrates that photons behave differently when being observed, quote unquote, by a measuring device of some kind, as opposed to being unobserved by any kind of measurement. They find this by watching how the photons impact on the film behind it. And the important thing to note here is that when under observation, the particles will behave in an expected manner, going through slits in a shield to the film behind it. But when not observed, they do not. They behave like a wave. They behave in an entirely different function. This goes to a lot of different areas and its implications, and the fact that our observation has more than just a passive effect. We've long known that observing a situation such as in anthropology, you can observe a culture, you're going to change that culture by the observation. This takes it to another level. And one last thing before we turn it over to discussion that I'd like to talk about is another interesting thought on this quantum physics level is, does the universe even exist if we're not here to observe it? This was an interesting idea put out by physicist John Wheeler, who essentially took the double slit experiment and put it onto the cosmic scale, saying that our observation of the universe impacts its development in certain ways, and he went on to theorize that in different sections, you know, different parts of the universe, different observers will influence those different sections in a sort of feedback loop where you have a creation upon creation and one side influencing the other and so on and so forth. So I'd like to turn it over to a little bit of discussion on this topic. Really, what do you think the implications of this are when we look at the fact that we know that there's a real measurable impact on the physical world from our thoughts and our observation? What does that have? How does that tie into other aspects of metaphysics? Does that provide any kind of perhaps evidence of entanglement in the fact that there is some kind of connection in the human race?
Sure, we can talk about that. Dr. Hunter, do you have any comments? I do, if you don't.
Go ahead. Absolutely, go ahead.
Well, this is a great discussion because the observer effect and closely related to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, it talks about superposition. They're talking about superposition, and Ella in the chat room mentioned Schrodinger's cat, which is a very well-known thought experiment. There's a box and a cat's in it. Is it alive or dead? I don't like it because I love cats, but you know. So for me, the cat's alive, and you don't know until you open the box and look. And there's more to it. But the thing is about superposition, and superposition is a quantum mechanics concept where reality does not unfold until you observe it or until you look at it, and until you choose it, if you will. So, you know, it's like, you know, there are three doors. I don't know, remember the what is the Monty Hall game show back in the day? Let's Make a Deal. You know, door one, door two, door three. What's behind him? Well, you know, you kind of almost in a sense create whatever it is. And so basically reality does not unfold until a decision's made or until it's observed. That's the gist of it. I'm not a quantum physicist. But anyway, it's an interesting thing, and it does have some correlation in a practical way in our life, and that is, you know, you get what you visualize. You get what you want. You get what you see. You know, it's like Wayne Dyer says, you know, you'll see it when you believe it type of thing. And that is kind of the way that life works. You know, you get what you focus on. You know, that's just life. If you want something, you're going to go after it, and you're going to go make it happen. And so, in a sense, you have determined the outcome. So I'm going to pause there for any other comments before I say anything else.
Well, what I find interesting about this is potentially mind-boggling is that I posted a video on one PC yesterday about, you know, it was a little Gaia. Gay is a website, by the way. Video. It's basically brain crystals and psychic power. And what it lends to is that we have we have magnetite in our brains. Like, we have all kinds of minerals and stuff in our bodies. But these magnetites are little crystals in our brains that have this capacity to relay information. And so what's suggested here is that specifically for depression, if you have low hertz and, you know, but if you have some magnetic treatment, it activates all these chemistries in the brain, including the magnetite. And when you raise the hertz in your energy, your electromagnetic frequencies, then it's elevating, and you elevate your thinking. It's uplifting, and you feel better. So it's a really interesting studies on depression in that regard. But taken to another quantum level, it's suggested that we have like these little radio frequencies that this magnetite is kind of like a phone. You know what I'm saying? It connects all these wires, like radio waves. And that not only with each other, but potentially with the universe. So I'm thinking that if your frequency is high enough and you're activated and you got all your faculties and elevating your frequencies, you become more receptive to the universe. And when you become conscious of that, again, it amplifies those frequencies for, which lends into everything from telepathy to tuning in to, they say not just the Earth's magnetic field, but even beyond that in the universe and various realities. And the suggestion is there for teleporting and time travel. And again, perceptions. I found that really fascinating. To me, that kind of connects a little bit, you know, with what you're talking about in quantum mechanics, double slit, you know, the observer effect and Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. So it all kind of, there's so many possibilities that we're looking at now to expand our awareness, but nothing's real until you look at it. And then if you look at it, that can amplify, and that's at some level just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. In the chat room, there's a question from Ella, Dr. Hunter, what are other ways of raising your vibrational level? How do you know what it is?
Well, now, that's really interesting question. For me, it's really hard to articulate because I do it from an, I can explain this from an experiential level. When energy, when people at a low frequency are negative people, they're hurtful. Them, it's a lower than my frequency. But at the same time, if I raise my frequency greater, those other negative energies can go through me and they don't bother me. Like somebody years ago said to me, they're living by a telephone line. And, you know, it has that hum and it's really irritating. And I said, well, if you raise your frequency so that that frequency goes through you, it's no you're no longer like in opposition to it. There's no longer that irritation. So then how do you raise your frequency? Well, it's done through thought, for one thing. I would suspect that there's some biological influence here too, you know, if you're unwell and unhealthy, you know, but at the same time, you can be really psychic and not well physically. So it's, I think, amplifying your thoughts. A lot of people make a lot of claims in the quote-unquote New Age world, and I really do think magnetics has relevance in a lot of ways, but there are many different techniques. The first of all is meditation, and to be able to calm your mind long enough that all of your neural pathways can flow evenly, and once basically you're allowing things to flow better so there's no blockages. That raises your frequency. But I think when we're talking about consciousness and mind versus matter, consciousness is that awareness, that awakeness. Like we can talk about consciousness in the universe. It has its own consciousness. We're connected. But the individual consciousness is being awake. I think awake to who you are and awake to how you think, awake to your energy, your state of being. And, you know, you can, well, there's lots of different, you know, ways we can say that. So I hope that makes sense. But elevating your frequency is becoming more awake.
Good points. All right, son, what's your next?
Well, I think we're really kind of already tackling it, which is the law of attraction. We're talking about the energy we're putting out into the universe. We're talking about the frequency that we're putting it out and trying to raise our vibrational level. And we kind of touched on the connection between the mind and body, right? You had mentioned, you know, if you're ill, the vibration can be off, which also goes to show that there is a correlation between, again, the physical and the mind, which is exists in the abstract. The mind is not physical. The mind doesn't have a location that we know of, per se. So the idea of strength of body, strength of mind is kind of, you know, materialistic in a certain sense, but, you know, the energy that you put out to the universe has a lot to do with what you get back. So, I mean, we've already been kind of launched into the laws of attraction and really what that entails.
What I love about that part of the conversation is how our, when you, you know, consciousness is not the body, it's not the brain. That's our intellect, and those are organic matters. So it's what we think it is. So an exercise for anyone is try to think without words, because we're all born thinking without words. We're processing senses. We're processing our, you know, the body and the organics through, you know, sight, sound, touch, and so on. But there's also that instinctual or kind of the autosensory perception, my old late teacher Frank would say. So we're sensing our way at many levels, and we are thinking, but we're doing it without words, which is in a meditation, we're all, because we're conditioned to use words, we think that's our consciousness. And, you know, of course, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am, but are we? And which is really interesting. There's an irony there. So to imagine processing thought without language, like without a worded language, and it's totally possible to kind of restore that to ourselves and then be open to, like, for instance, in psychic messages, you might get pictures or smells, or, and then we're trying to find the words for it, right, to articulate and communicate it, but it comes through senses. Psychic experiences rarely come through words. That's our intellect and how we're like just kind of interpreting it. You know, just my two bits worth.
I think that's a fascinating point. And when I'm listening, one thing that I'm thinking about is how music is a type of language without words, right?
Absolutely.
When we take out the lyrics and we just look at the actual music itself, it speaks to us without actual words, right? But it is still telling a story, even without the lyrics and the chorus. Me think of it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, but the music and the words are all part of the overall message, but the music is no less a part of the message than the words. Go ahead.
The underlying foundation. I mean, the words kind of adjust it and give you the angle of, give it that kind of final definition, but the music itself is a foundation of that, and I think that the music speaks to that other part of ourselves, because human beings, we are a hybrid creature, right? I mean, living things are. We're a hybrid between what you would poetically define as our soul and the physicality of our being.
And I think it's interesting, because words without the music is poetry. Mm. And that is an intellectualized version of a message. Whereas music with no lyrics is music remains music, which is all sensory. And it's not an intellectualization, it's an experience. Whereas lyrics are an experience, or like an intellectualized experience. Because now we're saying how to interpret this music, versus if you just listen to the music, you're going to interpret it in whatever way your consciousness experiences that music. Just throw that in there.
All right. Let's go on to your third point, if you're satisfied with this so far.
So. Well, the laws of attraction, meaning what energy we put out into the world, we can look at that in a more metaphysical way, meaning pure energy, the energy that we put out and the energy that we get back. We can simplify that to look at more practical, materialistic ways in terms of just pure behaviors. So that kind of takes us into a third point, which is our state of mind, our positivity, and how that actually has a measurable, practical impact on our behaviors, on our happiness, on our lives, our quality of lives. There's an old saying, and I don't know exactly who said it. I'm probably misattributing this to Pluto, but it was something along the lines of... thank you. I appreciate that. It's something along the lines of... It's on the tip of my tongue. I apologize.
That's okay. You think about it, and I will say, you know, it's a fact that happiness is where you see it, and sadness is where you see it. And if you look at the world, it all depends on your perspective, your disposition, your lens as to whether the world's a good place or a bad place. You know, in daily life. Go ahead.
It just occurred to me. The quote is, we are not affected by reality. We are affected by our perceptions of reality.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is exactly that.
Mm-hmm. But I might add in here, too, that we can think we're positive, but I've met a lot of positive-negative people, or what I call negative positives, where we've got all these patterns of behavior that we're conditioned with. So when we ask about consciousness, are we aware of those patterns? So we can say we're really happy. Like, I know some really happy people, but their behavior is really negative, like passive aggressives, or, you know, they're always tripping over negative behaviors, and they're not conscious or not self-aware. It's kind of like watching somebody say they're enjoying their food when they're, you know, eating with their mouth open and they're stabbing the food like it's not dead. But they're loving the food, but they're not aware of how they're experiencing that food. But they say they love the food, you know. So there's behaviors that get in the way of what we think is happiness because we're not conscious. So it goes back to me, I can think I'm really positive and I can feel really positive, but like there's a lot of things that don't necessarily reflect that. So,
well, that's true. Those are good points. You know, we have to be aware that, you know, how are we going to see the world? Are we going to say we're happy and yet, you know, focus on the negativities of the world? And I'm not saying be oblivious to them. You know, we all know what's going on in the world. But are we looking for the bright spots in the world, the bright lights, the bright stars in people that are in the world? And if we are, then we're going to generally be more positive and happier in life than if we focus on the negatives. And it's not hard to focus on the negatives. I mean, jeepers, look at the news. Look at most of the TV dramas and shows. You know, they're all, you know, all the murder mysteries are about murder mystery. You know, people getting hurt, people getting killed, and, you know, who done it. And I've often thought about that. Why is our culture, you know, our human nature, if you will, even at this point anyway, where we find entertainment in murders and all that. And it just, you know, and good news is not as dramatic or, I guess, appealing as the negatives or the dramatic sensational headlines that go on. I don't have an answer for that, but the point is that happiness is where you see it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you are not happy with your circumstances, maybe you're not happy with where you live or whatever, well, there are plenty of places around the world where your floor is not tile or carpet, it's dirt. You know, there's plenty of places around the world where, you know, you have to walk for your water and you know, hang out the window and go to the bathroom. It's all perspective. And so I'm not saying we shouldn't want to do better, but – you know, we have to focus on and be grateful for what we have.
You know,
Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, thank you. I like that point. And, you know, while you were talking, I thought about something else that that you've said often, and that is we're talking about free will, right? The notion is we do have free will. Does that mean we can fly whenever we want? No, of course not. We have the freedom to choose amongst our selected choices, right? We read off the menu. We can select something that we have available there, right? what I thought about while you were talking just a moment ago was that in order to make the best decisions, we need to have the best information. And what we take in the form of media, meaning news and entertainment and, you know, all of that, fiction, all of it, our social lives, everything that we take in is telling us what's on the menu, what our options are, what life is. So when we're thinking about what are our choices, what are our possibilities, what is our life, we're oftentimes going to these external sources, which means we need to be critical, by which I mean we need to be wise in the sources that we take in, in the information that we take in, because that will directly influence what we think is possible in this life, which will in turn directly influence what choices we make.
You know, I think you've made some really great points all the way around. To me, it's how I see myself. And then I observe the world and I can see chaos. But I can, when I know myself really well and intuitively, and I start kind of figuring out different realities, what's real, what's not real, I can intuitively know when it's garbage. I just know that. And I look beyond that, but I still have to accept that there's chaos. Here's my point for me. It's how do I see myself? How do I know myself? And then how do I see myself in the world? My dilemma usually is about there's that chaos. Now, what's my part? And what part am I playing in that chaos? How can I correct any negative part? Because if I become like them, then they've got me. They win. And this is me being a really selfish Scorpio, is they can't have me. So to stay as intact as I can, to know my nature and to be positive, to always be that internally, that doesn't mean I can't be fierce. It doesn't mean that I'm non-confrontational by any stretch, as you know. It just means that I learned all these wisdoms that, and thankfully, you know, IMHS teaches these skills of having good life skills in the world. So when I see chaos and I hear this and I filter what's real, what's not real, then I decide how I want. Do I want to go out and march in the streets? Do I want to participate in a local charity? Like, we each decide how we're going to participate in the world and remaining intact. So it's not just a perception of what I see out there. It's a perception of what I see inside me. And I always return to that. It's always, because that's all I know. So no matter what's done around me, done to me, I return to myself, and that's my mind versus matter, my mind over matter, trying to be as conscious as possible in a limited way in, you know, in how we are in the world. So that's my little speech. And I hope somebody can glean something from that, because no matter what is going on, we still have to be ourselves and tune into other people who are of like energy, not just like mind, but like energy. You can have different beliefs, but our energy is basically on a similar frequency. And we're not, without the intellectualization of who believes in what religions or philosophies, but that we're good, kind people. And without that magnetism in the consciousness, you know, we might as well just be a bunch of sheep and go with the flow. But they can't have me, so that's where I stand.
You know,
good points.
I really like that outlook, and I like that kind of spoke to me a little bit. I have a visualization practice I do a lot of times. I don't know if this will help anybody or not, but when life, it's kind of coming at it from a slightly different angle. But when life feels utterly chaotic, and when I feel uncertain and a little bit out of control, I kind of do this practice where I visualize myself, and I, as my body, and I visualize myself, and I'll visualize myself as stone, and the world around me is a maelstrom, a sandstorm, a chaos and energy, but I am not. I am steady. I am
exactly
stone. I am calm.
I love that.
Good. Yeah, very good.
That's exciting, because that's what it. But then you're going to tune into that, and the more you do that, you're going to tune into other frequencies. Like, and truly I believe this, and quantum entanglement or otherwise, that you'll tune into other people on the planet who are doing exactly the same thing with those very thoughts, and that will amplify. I truly believe that.
Like attracts like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Good point, Jim.
What a great discussion. I appreciate this discussion, and I hope that some other folks, and, you know, Patrick mentioned gratitude. That's all a part of it. You know, there's, but again, there's intellectualizations. What we are really talking about too here is mind versus matter and the expansions of consciousness. And Michael's had a really inspired a great discussion tonight. I like it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, very good. All right. So, we have some folks in the chat who would like a card pulled, and if you're new to this, we have a deck of what we call inner oracle cards, self-discovery cards, and they're a set of 54 cards in different suits that basically have nuggets of what we teach and what we believe and what's taught in our school curriculums, and they get you thinking. That's what they're designed to do, to get you thinking. So if you would like a card pulled and you haven't put your name in the chat room, please do so now, and we'll start it. And it looks like Patrick is our first contestant for the draw a card game.
Come on down. Patrick, I went ahead and picked a card for you to get us started. Michael's going to be on standby for Sherry. Unknowable, and it's number 4 in the wild card suit. There are mysteries in the universe. Boy, we've been talking about that, eh? Not all can be known and predicted. A focus of deliberate intent can reveal valuable unforeseen knowledge for what lay ahead. Remember, we only see what we know and believe. Isn't that an interesting card to pull now? The universe is unfolding in ways that are unknowable to your existing ways of thinking. Change your mind and you change your world. Change your mind and what was once unknowable may now be knowable. Listen to the subtle leadings and incitations of your higher self. What was once unknowable is now knowable. Remember that. Remain flexible and open to change. And Frances said she pulled for the room, wild card number 4. Well, I just read it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, Michael, we have Sherry up next.
All right, and for Sherry, I pulled number 22 in this. Is perfect for what we were just talking about. Think for yourself. Better understanding one's own mind brings one closer to honesty and self-responsibility. Thinking for yourself prevents being swayed by the potentially unhealthy thinking of others, as well as outside popular beliefs simply for popularity's sake. If you don't think for yourself, you sacrifice your identity for someone else's identity. This may be a time to exercise critical thinking in order to best determine and listen to your own truth.
A mystery. All right, we have Dr. Edward up next, and I pulled for you in the existential suit, number 15, belief system and knowledge base. We each operate life from an existing belief system, and sometimes the solution or direction lies outside our belief system. Equally, when knowledge is expanded, a belief system calls for revision. Consider that opening the mind for more information and knowledge might be required, subsequently adjusting a belief system. Know that the knowledge you seek is within you. So I hope that resonates with you at some level, Dr. Edward. Dr. Frank is up next. Michael?
All right. For Dr. Frank, I pulled number 1, perfection, and I don't know that we've seen this one in a while, but it's a good one. Always remember that you are perfect just as you are, a perfect work in progress, always changing and growing. Today is a reflection of past choices, and tomorrow is changeable by choices made today. This card may indicate that a situation is either perfect or not perfect for you. Embrace all mistakes as they are vital to your growth while striving for a better future. Reflect to see what contributes to your perfect journey and move forward gracefully.
That's good. Yeah, we haven't picked that one in a long time.
Good message. Well, Fran, I've got your card. Fran mentioned in the chat that she couldn't believe that we read that wild card number 4 before she could even finish typing it. So it's a little quantum entanglement, Fran. There you go. But for you, I picked out number 41, communications. The most important form of communication is with the higher self, reflecting on one's spiritual evolution. A good communicator both listens and speaks equally, interactively, and with interest. A poor communicator either talks too much or listens too much. A lack of communication will kill any relationship, and this is the most effective method for ending an unhealthy relationship. Assertive communication is direct, honest, empathetic, and focuses on win-win. Communication, along with trust, is one of the two most important relationship traits. So at some level, if that makes sense in your life or someone who you might be dealing with, you know, and a little reminder for yourself that, you know, it's just one of those. That's what we're doing here when we choose cards. It's just a reminder. There are things that we all know. But it's whatever applies and reminding in a situation a day and some other layer of life. So Dr. Jeff is up next. Michael?
All right. And for Dr. Jeff, I pulled number 33, preference and principle. A mark of knowledge and wisdom is knowing when and how to offer an opinion or voice a complaint. If it is a matter of preference, yield. If it is a matter of principle, policy, or law, stand firm. It is important to know when and where to pick your battles. Be selective regarding the areas in which you invest your energy.
That's always a good one. Good nugget to live by.
Absolutely.
That's what we have to do, is pick our battles, you know. So often we end up taking ourselves too seriously and we get involved in things, angry things that, you know, really don't matter. And so it's always wise advice to pick your battles and not to take oneself too seriously. And as I've said 100 times, I have to work at that myself, you know. So, you know, it's important to just chill and be calm, even amidst chaos, as Michael brought out, and just, you know, don't worry about too much. That's the thing. Not worry about too much.
And putting things in context. You know, oftentimes, another practice I do, again, if things are feeling, if I'm taking myself too seriously or I'm taking life too seriously, something I do is I think on all of the experiences, all the journeys, all the events that occurred to our ancestors, to the going throughout the millennia of human existence, going beyond that, going into the wider universe. We see all the stories that have taken place over and over again, and we see where our story fits in that wider narrative, and we start to see it for what it really is, and that kind of helps put things in perspective. What really matters.
Good points.
Well, if I can just take a little liberty here for a moment, if no one minds, would like to just pay a little tribute to my late teacher, Frank Appleyard, my mentor who passed away a week ago, and he was 81, and huge impact on my life. I got my hypnosis certification from him exactly 40 years ago this year, which is amazing. How, you know, you think about all the ground that was covered in 40 years, but a huge impact on reality, quantum physics. We'd have endless discussions, and he and his wife would have a bunch of us into their home, and he was one of the founding hypnotherapists in the hospitals in Canada back in the day. Anyway, so he had quite the history, and his wife was quite a scholar, school teacher. And one of the things about reality that triggers here tonight for me too is he would say there's fact and there's opinion, and the only fact we know is there's a sky and a moon, and we're on Earth. Everything else in life is an opinion. One of the first lessons of that understanding opinion was he put a coffee mug on a table, in the middle of an empty table, and he said, I look at that cup, we think it's a cup, it's a vessel, and there's a handle on the right. But you're looking at it from the opposite side of the table, and the handle is on the left. Anybody from a different point of, you know, sitting around this table is going to see that. But here's the point he also made, is we've agreed to call that a cup. Some call it a mug. But really, it's an empty vessel that we have found a common term. So that's a reality we've agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
So we agree on our reality as being more truthful, which doesn't necessarily make it true at all. It's just a perception and our agreement. And mm-hmm. it was some of the most impactful lessons that, you know, I took away from that period that carried with me. Thankfully, we remained in touch. I'm very grateful I called him on his birthday this year. And, you know, he'll be missed down here, but he really believed life is eternal and that we are just transforming energy from one, you know, one reality
into another.
And I wish him well on his journey and send all my best to his family, his wife, his daughter and grandchildren and extended family. And just want to pay a little tribute. And if I might make mention, it's good. Everyone out there, when you've had a mentor, a teacher, or somebody who's impacted your life in a good way, and it might just be the cashier at the store, say, I appreciate you. Just those little things in life that makes our joined reality amplified with a greater bond. It strengthens us. It really does.
It does. My condolences for your loss. And it was a nice tribute as well.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, he was a great guy.
So tonight we've had discussed a lot of things, you know, our role, the role of our attitude toward our reality, toward our happiness, toward our state of mind. We talked about things unknowable becoming knowable, thinking for yourself, belief system and knowledge base, being perfect, communicating effectively, and the difference between preference and principle. So there have been a lot of good nuggets in this program tonight, as usual, the usual case. And we appreciate everybody's participation, your comments. Thank you for your time. Thanks to Dr. Hunter, as always, and Michael, too. Couldn't do this without both of you, and we appreciate your wisdom and guidance and input. So, folks, until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and really live. Good night.
Good night, everyone. See you next week.
Good night, everyone.